and welcome back to the Normalize You podcast. I'm your host, Gabby, and today's interviewee is Dr. Lindo Bacon. Dr. Lindo Bacon is a researcher and former professor, and for nearly two decades taught courses in social justice, health, weight, and nutrition. Dr. Bacon holds a PhD in physiology with a specialty in nutrition and master's degrees in both psychology and exercise metabolism. Dr. Bacon has mined their deep academic proficiency, their clinical expertise, and their personal experience to write two best-selling books, Health at Every Size, The Surprising Truth About Your Weight, and co-authored Body Respect, What Conventional Health Books Get Wrong, Leave Out, or Just Plain Fail to Understand About Weight. Their newly released book, Radical Belonging, How to Survive and Thrive in an Unjust World While Transforming It for the Better, takes their inspiring message beyond size to shaping a culture of empathy, equity, and true belonging. So without further ado, I would like to introduce to you Dr. Lindo Bacon. Hi, Lindo. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good, Gabby. It's nice to see you.
Yes, so nice to officially meet you. So I'm sure you've gotten this question so much, but how is the pandemic treating you? How's quarantine going for you?
Oh man, that question feels so overwhelming because I feel like anytime you ask me, it's just like a little snapshot in time and I'm on a bit of an emotional roller coaster. So you could get any answer. And, you know, I suppose that sums it up that I feel so much more raw right now and just vulnerable. And so I go all over the place. And I think that to me really characterizes my whole pandemic experience.
Yeah, I feel like I've been telling a lot of people, I feel like this time has been such a reflective period for me and such a time of growth because I feel like we're constantly go, 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 you know, and we're trying to achieve things, trying to get on top of things. And we finally have this moment to slow down and to really just kind of think about our internal thoughts and how we're feeling with ourselves and our bodies and all the above. So it's definitely been, I totally resonate with that answer of kind of all over the place for sure.
Yeah. And I think too that, while I might have the experience of slowing down just like you, I'm not sure that's the experience for many people. I think that there are a lot of people that are feeling the need to really hustle, you know, they're feeling pretty desperate because economic opportunities have been taken away and, you know, they're constantly searching for more or feeling just a lot of pressure. I think the pandemic experience is just so different for everybody. But, you know, the one thing that we all share in common is just, I don't know, this level of intensity or something that, because even if our personal experience might not be so hard, we're witnessing in the world a lot of devastation.
Oh, yeah.
And that's painful.
For sure. 100%. The world is definitely, it has experienced a lot recently, and I think it's impacting everybody very differently. I also think it's showing who has the voice and who wants to just kind of step up to the plate and speak out and advocate for others versus there's people that are kind of sitting on the sidelines. So I think it's been a very introspective time too, I think for a lot of people to kind of decide what they want to do, what they want to say and how they want to kind of continue on. I'm curious as to your thoughts on that.
Right. And I think really it's not as if times are, well, like, for example, we're seeing racial justice in the news as front and center issue right now. And it's not as if things have actually gotten worse, you know, like injustice, white supremacy, they've always existed.
Yeah.
But I think what's characteristic of these times is now they're front and center. It used to be that only people affected by them saw it, or, you know, for the most part. And now people who didn't have to see it because they were living lives of privilege are forced to.
Yeah.
And we can really see how ugly our country is in so many ways and how unjust it is. And so, yeah, it's a time of reckoning where I hope that, like, the way to change this is like the power is in our collective voices.
Yeah,
And so
definitely.
it's a time of responsibility, you know?
Yeah.
Like if you have economic privilege to get through these times, like maybe you wake up to the fact that possibly that's because you've had a lot of support and resources in the world that have allowed you
Oh, yeah,
to
for
get
sure.
to that place. And those same resources have been denied to other people who are working equally as hard as you.
Yeah, definitely.
And so, if you're gliding through this epidemic, it's a real important time to kind of look at what allows for that, you
Yeah.
know, and what's your responsibility in all of
Yeah.
this? And
100%.
those are hard questions to sit with.
Yeah, for sure. I was on a long walk the other day and I was listening to a Brené Brown podcast, and she talks about everything that happened at the Capitol and everything like that. And, you know, she's big on talking about vulnerability and shame. And one of the quotes that she said in her podcast that just really resonated with me was the fact that shame undermines accountability. And what needs to happen is accountability. And we're lacking that in this country. And it was just like a huge, I don't know, it just really sat with me. And I've thought about it a lot, but not in the way that she was talking about it and the change that needs to happen in the world and how accountability is so key and how so many prominent figures haven't been held accountable. And it's just this domino effect. And so yeah, it was just a really good podcast episode to listen to.
Well, I have to say that I might be with you in theory, but
Okay.
the word accountability is really quite triggering for me.
Yeah.
Because it, well, first off, I think the what we need to ask of people is very different when we're thinking about organizations versus individuals. Organizations tend to have power, you know, like the power of corporations.
Yeah.
And so these kind of public call outs that we're seeing, you know, those may be appropriate.
Yeah.
But when we start to look at accountability for individuals, I
Yeah.
think that's a very different picture.
Yeah.
And I suppose I'm just really sensitive about this whole call out culture that's evolved from
Solving.
all of
Yeah.
this,
Yeah, understandably so.
and just how damaging it's been. So I suppose I prefer to use the word responsibility rather
I
than
like that.
accountability, because I think responsibility is asking people to evaluate like what's their ethical platform, and take a stand for it.
Yeah.
Whereas accountability seems to be more something that you do for others.
Okay, yeah. I see your point 100%. Yeah. Yeah, I like the
So,
word responsibility too. I like that.
yeah.
It seems a little less intense, maybe. I don't know if that's the right word that I'm looking for, but yeah, I see what you mean.
Yeah, and it seems a little more authentic, whereas
Yes.
accountability seems a little bit more performative, you know, like
Yeah.
there's this idea of what you're supposed to do, and you do that, which doesn't give the person like their own sense of agency. Like it doesn't allow the person to look at their own moral framework and do what they think is right.
Yeah.
Instead, it asks people to do what they're supposed to do within this whole dogma of social justice,
Yeah.
which may or may not be the right thing,
Yeah,
right?
definitely.
But
100%.
regardless, I think it's important when it comes from a sense of individual responsibility.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for that outlook. I always am very appreciative of kind of looking at things from different perspectives. So I appreciate that. And hopefully, when I said that phrase, it wasn't too triggering, and knowing that it was just something that I heard that really resonated. But I like both
Right.
perspectives.
No, I think I'm like hyper sensitive right now, just watching some people that are being victimized by this whole demand for accountability, and call out culture
Yeah.
that has kind of erupted unfairly
Yeah.
sometimes. I mean,
Very fair.
sometimes, of course, it feels very demanded, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But not always.
Definitely.
And I
Yeah.
think that many of us fear this, you know, like we're scared of saying the wrong thing from a social justice perspective,
Yeah.
because we're seeing all of those call outs and
Yeah.
demands for accountability. And it sets people up to not take risks, to not get involved on in social justice because they're scared of doing the wrong thing. And somehow we just need to have a more compassionate way of doing this,
Yeah,
you know?
definitely.
And I'm all for asking people to take responsibility, but if we can figure out how to ask for it in a way that's more respectful,
Yeah.
we'll get more participation in the
100%.
movement.
Yeah, definitely.
And while I say that, I also can almost hear the criticism that might erupt from that. Because I also know that marginalized people have the right to be angry, and you know, not to tone it down for other people's safety. So I think all of these issues get so confusing,
Yeah.
you know.
Yeah,
But
definitely.
anyway, that's not even what you contacted me to talk about.
Yes,
We got off on a
let's get
little
into
tangent here.
let's get into the meat of the interview. So, obviously a lot of people know you for Haze, Health at Every Size. So, you've published awesome books. I've read Body Respect, Health at Every Size. I just got Radical Belonging in the mail, so I'm really excited to start that. But I wanted to ask you, how did you come up with the term Haze? How did this term come about? And it's just become so global, and I think I love it. I love what it's all about. I love what it stands for. It helped me through my own recovery with a 10-year eating disorder. So I'm curious as to how the term came to be.
Well, I didn't invent the term health at every size. And in fact, I'm a latecomer to the health at every size movement. It was around for a long time before I'd ever even heard of it. And, you know, for its roots, I'd recommend that you actually look to other places than me, since I don't have that history so much. But one organization I really want to give a heads up to is ASDA, the Association for Size Diversity and Health. And in their archives, you'll find a wonderful review of the history of HACE written by Barbara Bruno. And ASDA has actually trademarked the term health at every size, and so they own the copyright. So I think that they're a wonderful place to look for a definitive definition. But nonetheless, what I can claim credit for is perhaps helping to popularize the movement with my
Yes.
book. And I appreciate that the book's gotten a lot of attention and has helped people to be more thoughtful. Although, again, I want to emphasize that I'm just one of many people
Yeah, no, of course.
that are talking about the movement and helping to popularize it. But I jumped on the bandwagon because it just makes sense. I mean, we've spent so much time shaming people for their weight and telling them to do things that are just not helpful or productive, like dieting and even exercising to lose weight. Exercising is a wonderful thing. I'm not taking it down. As a method of weight loss, it hasn't proven to be successful. And, you know, connecting it to weight loss makes it unfun and takes away people's motivation to do it in a lasting way. So, anyway, I think that the old model of looking at bodies has done so much damage. And I appreciate that the Health at Every Size movement is challenging this. It's helping us to recognize, first off, that health behaviors aren't even the big thing that play a role in health. I mean, what we know now more than ever is that Health is really about social determinants and about politics. I mean, if we want to lessen rates of diabetes, one of the best things we can do is to raise minimum wage. That's going to have much larger impact than telling people to lower their sugar content in their diet. And that's been well supported by the scientific evidence. And so Health at Every Size helps to bring all that stuff to the forefront. And so it's a movement I can get behind. And interestingly enough, I realize as I say that, that not all this stuff is reflected in my book, Health at Every Size, which was written over a decade ago. In that book, I really just emphasize the lifestyle behaviors, like how to eat well and how to exercise regularly, how to improve your attitude, like all of those things that are participants in good health. But I didn't talk about how that stuff is eclipsed by the social determinants. And it wasn't until my second book, Body Respect, which was co-authored with Lucy Afremore, that we were able to talk about those issues and kind of help to update how the Health at Every Size movement has changed over time.
Yeah, definitely.
But I appreciate that I've had opportunity to kind of have this platform and raise these issues because I think that the current approach to health, which seems to be focused on weight, is so damaging and so not based on scientific evidence. So I know that Health at Every Size has been a lifeline for so many people who finally feel seen and valued and as if they have a plan to work with of, what can be helpful for them. And I'm so glad to be able to kind of be a spokesperson for something that has helped so many people.
Yeah, definitely. Do you think it's critical for medical doctors, pediatricians to be psychoeducated on health at every size? And I ask that because I know myself and many other people that I've spoken to had the experience where at one point their pediatrician was like, you are overweight, borderline obese based on your BMI, so you need to go on a diet. And I was told that at 8 years old. And that's really what triggered a lot of the maladaptive behaviors that I engaged in that eventually led to an eating disorder. So yeah, I'm curious if you think that is a critical thing that needs to change for doctors to be more educated in the realm of health at every size.
Absolutely. And I think that the current medical education is just really damaging on these issues. And it's sad because people go into healthcare because they want to help people and they want to make a difference. And if they're not exposed to the ideas that are really going to do that, then it's just so undermining of these good, compassionate people. So, yeah, we need to change medical education to make Health at Every Size front and center. And fortunately, I think that change is happening slowly. And I know that there are several schools that are teaching classes on Health at Every Size, and it is flowing in on a smaller level. Certainly not to the degree that it needs to. But I think it's getting harder and harder for physicians not to be exposed to this paradigm. If they don't get it in school, it's seeping into the general public now. And I think too that doctors need to be seeing this, that their patients aren't getting better when they prescribe diets. And that, we see data, for example, that people avoid medical care because they don't want to get shamed by their doctors. Like listen to your experience of being put on the diet at a young age. And if you don't stick to that diet or get the results your doctor is looking for, you're going to feel ashamed to go back. And
Yeah. I was so scared to go back to my doctor. Like, I remember telling my mom, "Mom, I can't go. Like, I haven't lost weight," or, "Oh my gosh, this is going to be so awful." Like, I was terrified of both the scale and my doctor.
Right. And routine weighing, part of medical care these days. And just that alone scares a lot of people away from going in for visits. So I think it's time that you see this, that even if they're taught, they've got this belief system, the fact that it's having this result for their patients is something they need to pay attention to.
100%, for sure. If you don't mind me asking, have you ever in the past, before coming across the Haze approach, had issues with body image or relationships with food or relationship with exercise?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, the only reason I got into this work was because food and exercise issues were just so painful for me. From a very young age, I had this belief system that I was too fat, that if only I lost weight, I would get so much more acceptance. Not just feeling more attractive in the world, but feeling like I had value. It goes really deep. And that set me on a path of pursuing diets because I was told that's the answer, and exercising to try to lose weight. And I got deep into an eating disorder. So, yeah, from personal experience. And I think that for me, education is like I try to think my way out of things. And so that's why I started to study all this stuff in school, is the idea that maybe academic education, I can learn something that's going to save me from all of this pain. So, I went on to get three graduate degrees in fields that were all related to eating and weight and body stuff, all in hopes of being able to save myself.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, it's crazy how diet centric our society is and how entrenched diet culture is. I don't think I realized it for myself personally until I was out of my eating disorder, because it's just so normalized. Being on a diet is normalized. It's not seen as something that's potentially dangerous behavior. And now being on the other side of it and seeing it from that lens, it's just like the fact that these behaviors coincide or have some correlation for many people with eating disorder criteria just blows my mind, because it's a mental
Right.
health disorder. And so it's just like crazy when you think of it in those terms.
Yeah, and I also have so much compassion both for the health professionals that are pushing dieting and for the people that believe in it. Because it's, as you're saying, it's not just normalized, it's believed to be good health behavior. Right. And so they think that they're doing the right thing, and how people have just been duped. And,
So true.
And I also, hey, you get real rewards in this world when you're thinner.
So true.
People don't treat people who are heavier very kindly. And it's not just socially, it's harder to get good jobs if you're fatter. It's harder to advance in your career. All of this stuff is really well established. So it makes sense that people would want to run away from being fat and want to avoid it and would want to grab on to the things that are they're told are good and right and valuable,
Of
like
course.
dieting.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's why it becomes so important for people like you and me to keep sounding out and letting people know that there's an alternative out there that is based on evidence that can help people to not just get healthier, but just feel their own power, feel their own value in the world.
I agree.
And everybody deserves that.
100%. I always love honing in on the fact that we're so much more than a body. And I think when we start to focus on all the other incredible aspects about who we are, we actually authentically and genuinely appreciate ourselves and our soul. Because I just think the hyper focus is on the body, what we look like, what we weigh, what jean size we wear, what clothes we fit into or we don't fit into. And it's like there's all these other incredible things about who we are that make us who we are that we're 1000% neglecting because we're so hyper focused on changing what we look like.
Right. And if we could work on both at once, one is appreciating that body that we have, not just for how it looks, but also its functionality. And also, as you're saying, recognizing too that we are so much more than that body and valuing all those aspects of our character.
Yeah, 100%. So speaking about just like bodies and who we are, all that stuff. So you've been very open about, the transition that you've been going through of authentically pursuing who you are, from Linda to Lindo. So if you don't mind, since you've been so open about it, how has that transition and that journey been for you, both physically and mentally?
Okay, well, I'm not so sure the audience is as up as you are on what
That's
that
true.
transition
Transition
is.
is. Yeah. So if you wouldn't
And
mind, yeah. Talking
so
about.
maybe if I can just tell a little story that'll help to bring people up to
Love it.
speed.
Yes, go for it.
Because I published my first two books under the name Linda Bacon, and that was the name that my parents gave me at birth. And I remember at age 13 when I was going for my bat mitzvah, which is a Jewish coming of age ritual for girls. We become women on that day. And my father gave a speech and he talked about why they chose the name Linda. And they chose the name Linda because it means beautiful.
Spanish.
And right, in Spanish and in Portuguese, which incidentally is not my cultural tradition, so there is a bit of cultural appropriation there, but we won't go into that right now. I want to focus more on the meaning of the word and what they intended with it. And I should also note that in Spanish, the A at the end is signifies femininity. You use that for a girl. And I remember sitting there in the audience and just feeling like just the shock and the pressure, like just recognizing that, yeah, my parents had always wanted me to be beautiful. And it's something that I always felt like I failed at. And not only that I failed at, but that I was disinterested in. Like femininity just wasn't my thing, or feminine beauty just wasn't my thing. And, I remember too just how painful it was for me to be sitting in the audience in this dress that my mom had forced me to wear when what I really wanted to be wearing was a suit. Like the suits that you would buy in the men's department just felt so much more a reflection of who I was. And so all my life, the name Linda just never resonated for me. It just, once I heard of that meaning, it just seemed to bring to the fore this whole idea that it didn't represent who I was. And it also represented the fact that I was going to be a failure in my parents' eyes because I wasn't measuring up to their idea of who they wanted me to be. And then later in life, when I was hanging out with a guy and Spanish was his native language, and we just had such a beautiful connection. And he was really getting to know the authentic me. And my name is something that never waited for him. And after being for a few hours, he just had this aha moment, and he looks at me and he says, "I get it. You're Lindo." And he explained that what he was doing was he was masculinizing the ending, and that when you masculinize the ending, it's the word changes, that Linda has connotations more of physical beauty, but when you change it to Lindo, not only is it masculinized, but that it takes on the aspect of beautiful essence.
Yes.
And I love the idea of how this word kind of messes with both gender and ideas of beauty. And it felt so right when he said it. And since then, I've changed my name legally to Lindo. So my most recent book is published under that name. And it's also been helpful because I feel like it's more of a public assertion of who I am. That previously, everybody saw me as a woman, and I've never felt like a woman. That's not my gender identity. And this is more of an assertion that lets people know, like, no, I'm not. See me for who I am. And of course, I don't fit into that binary system. So just because it's a masculinized ending, I don't want people to think of me as a man. But it's helpful for me to let people know that I mess with traditional ideas of gender and I want to be seen for who I am.
That's awesome. I love that story, and I'm Peruvian American, so Spanish was my first language, and I love the word lindo. When you say it's just for me, it's just I say so many things are beautiful. And so I love that kind of universal aspect to it. But then also, it's more not about the physical, but about the essence, the beauty that's in it. And so I really love that story. That's a really beautiful story.
And another thing I want to add is it's a way of preserving my heritage. I mean, what parents really wanted from me is they wanted me to have a good life, right? And they just perceived that if I was beautiful as a woman, that that's how women have access to a good life,
Yeah, of course.
right? So it's a way of holding on to my parents' intention, but making it more authentically about who I am.
Yeah, definitely. And how has your support system been? Were they really supportive when you kind of talked about this more openly, or how did that go?
It made sense to
Made
everybody
sense.
in my life because people who know me, like, it's not as if I'm a different person. I mean,
No.
I'm my gender identity is actually like I don't consider myself gender fluid. Like, my gender identity has never changed since young age. And so anybody that knows me personally saw that in me, right? So it's no surprise, and it made sense. And so, of course, I got great support from everybody in my life. And I think for people that don't know me, like if you just know me as this public figure who's written a book, it's of course easy for everybody to just assume woman, right? And so this is kind of a way of saying, I'm giving you less reason to do that right now. And it's making it easier for those conversations to take place. Because, till now, people that didn't know me always just assumed woman. And still, a lot of people do. They hear my voice. And that brings up connotations for them. So I think I really mess with that whole system of how we're taught to put people into categories based on certain ideas we have of what constitutes a woman or what constitutes a man, and this belief system that those are the only two options for people.
100%. I agree for sure. I think that's awesome, and I think it's for me it's interesting to see kind of the generational impact it's had too, just because now, you know, we didn't before, but we ask, "Hey, what are your preferred pronouns?" right? And so my dad, who was like born in the 60s, is like, "Preferred pronouns? What are you talking about?" you know? And so I have to like
Right.
psychoeducate my dad and my mom and stuff. And so it's just interesting, and I love how progressive we've become in that realm, because I just think it's beautiful, and I think it's very telling, and it allows people to be more authentically who they are and not fit
Right.
into a box.
Right. And I should say that I don't really like the term preferred pronouns
Okay.
because I think that it implies that it's just a preference, right? Instead of, and these are my pronouns,
Yes.
right? So I always use the term personal pronouns
Personal
instead,
pronouns. Okay, yeah, makes
right?
sense. No,
But
for sure.
yeah, I think that that's important. That too often we just make assumptions about what somebody's pronouns are, and for me, that's like a kick in the gut every time somebody refers to me as she. Like it just feels like I'm not being seen right now,
No, yeah. Yeah,
and
100%.
so I wish that that people wouldn't make those assumptions, but if they don't know somebody, that they would just ask.
Yeah, 100% for sure. So if you could say anything to anybody out there, whether they're struggling with their relationship with their body, with food, with being authentically who they are, what would you say?
Find community. That's what we all need. We all need safe places where people just see us and love us for who we are. If we mess up, you know, like if we, even for those people who are struggling with substance abuse problems, say, right? That like they need people in their life that are not going to like judge them, but instead see them with compassion and be there for them, despite the fact that they're struggling,
A
right?
100%.
So
Yeah.
we all just need people who love and support us unconditionally. And I think that culturally, we need to figure out how to provide that for people more, how to lighten up of our judgments and just make it safe for people to be who they are in this world. And we don't do that.
I agree. I think groups and just have finding a community that you relate to and that you can feel not judged, or that you don't have to feel like you have to struggle in silence with whatever you may be struggling with, is so important and so key to a lot of healing, I feel like, for a lot of people.
Exactly. And I think that it's so important that we all keep working on ourselves individually to figure out how we can create more openness for other people to just kind of manifest as they are. You know, I think about recently, I watched the conversation happen where somebody was very politely trying to make conversation with somebody else. And so they asked a typical conversation opener. They asked that question, the person, the question, "Where are you from?" And the person happened to be Latinx. And for them, that question was really uncomfortable because it seemed to imply like you're not real American, you
Yeah.
know, you're from someone else. And this person had grown up in LA. And the like while the person asking the question was very well intended, the impact of the question was
Yeah.
very different. And I think that for people who have that sense of belonging, like it was a white person that asked that question, and it doesn't bring up that same threat to them, you know. But if they had been more aware of how that question is often meant to alienate people and, you know, separate the real Americans from the people who don't really belong here,
Yeah.
they would have found another question to open up the conversation, right? So a lot of it is about us just learning about the stuff we don't know
100%, for
and
sure.
how our questions often just reassert dominance without our even knowing it. And so we have to always keep learning about the experiences of people not like us.
100%. Yeah, I definitely agree. That question to someone who identifies as Latinx definitely has the connotation. I know if somebody asked me that, I'd be kind of like, "Oh, are you trying to insinuate that I don't belong or that I don't look like a typical American? Like, what is that trying to tell me?" So, yeah, I definitely agree. That awareness and just always wanting to grow. I don't know. I personally, I believe we should never stop growing and learning because it's just enough. It's always going to be happening. You know, as long as I live on this earth, I always want to be growing because there's always new things to learn and to be a better person and to, you know how to say things in order to be more sensitive to other human beings, things like that. So, yeah, I 1000% agree that that's such a key component to our growth.
Right. So dropping questions like that and dropping questions like, or adding questions like asking people their pronouns without making assumptions. Because, hey, I feel so shut out of the world so much. You know, anytime somebody makes that assumption and calls me she, it's just a reminder to me that the world isn't set up for me, you know, that people just don't see me. And we can just think of all of the ways in which we have hierarchies, you know, like money is another huge way in which we have hierarchy. And we judge people on their jobs, right? Certain jobs are given more respectability than others. So if you're at a party where there's mostly middle class people, a typical question is, what kind of work do you do? But if there's a working class person there, right, that question might bring up the fact that these people are going to judge them inadequately, you know, because the kind of work that they do doesn't put them in a class that gives them respect, right? So learning all of the ways in which we just assume other people are like us and that we don't recognize and make space for people who may be stigmatized or discriminated against is important. And I also think that we need to learn a bit of lightness about this too and not judge people when they do say things that are hurtful. But instead, inviting people in, because I can certainly understand why people misgender me. That totally makes sense. And so I'm learning that even though it's hurtful to me, to kind of have compassion for why people might say, and just like a gentle statement that's gonna help them because this might be the first time that they've been to it, or you know, there's good reasons why they haven't had to be thoughtful about it,
100%.
right? And if we can, I wish we had a kinder world for helping people to see our difference. And I recognize that that's a hard thing because you know, we're triggered when we feel like we've been hurt.
Definitely. I think it's really telling. And I think it's also really cool to kind of see, you know, when someone maybe says something insensitive or doesn't approach a question the proper way. I think there's a pretty big difference between someone who's unwilling to change that and be like, I'm so sorry, I didn't know that. I'm learning, please tell me how to correct this versus someone who just is like, okay, why are you being so sensitive? You know, gets defensive because that's just more projection. And so it's interesting to see kind of that difference between the reaction that people give.
Right. And, you know, so that's the world I'm looking for, where we're all just sensitive to one another, and willing to learn and to see one another and to let one another in. And that's why my most recent book was a book about belonging, and it's all about how we create that world where we see other people and we feel seen and valued for who we are.
100%. I'm excited to dive into that book. I was studying a lot for my NCE, so now I have time to really go into the books that I've been wanting to read. But thank you so much for this conversation. I've learned so much and grown just in these like 45 to 50 minutes. And I love having conversations like this that are so open and authentic and talking about things that matter and that are important. So I really appreciate the fact that you took time out of your day to chat with me.
Oh, you are lovely, Gabby. It's been awesome to talk to you too. And wow, it's a weird thing to know people are listening, not to see them, be able to interact. But hello to everybody in the audience, and
No, I think they're gonna
wishing
love this
y'all
episode.
good tidings.
Yeah, I think people are gonna love this episode. I think it's gonna bring about a lot of powerful and awesome information that maybe they didn't know about. So, yeah, I think it's gonna be great. Thank
Good.
you so much.
All right. Take care, Gabby. Bye.